Eddie, the Senior Year. Chapter 3. The Indoor Season, Part 1. The first meet of the year is on a Saturday, which seems to be an annual tradition. Since New Year's Day fell on a Thursday, the indoor season started a little late this year. The annual matchup between Northside, Riverdale, Centerville, and Madison is no different this year, except that Riverdale and Centerville are really tired of getting their ass kicked. In an attempt to change things, the other teams have also hired interns from the local colleges and universities to help with their training. Even Madison, the basement dweller, has searched for ways to improve their performance in the last few months. Mr. Fraser, however, still wants all of the gold medals, which now seems to be his yearly tradition. Centerville's coach, Mr. Ruff, is on the warpath. He has had enough of the recent controversies, but will nevertheless look for trouble wherever he can. Centerville's star sprinter, Todd McCutcheon, is in his senior year and has a score to settle with Mark. It is not likely that McCutcheon will ever beat Mark at anything, but he's sure to try. The Riverdale coach, Mr. Lyons, usually has a good team, but nowhere near as good as Northside. Mr. Lyons, who usually walks away with the bulk of the second-place medals in the relay events in this yearly matchup, has vowed to step up his game. For Northside, the event assignments have been finalized, and the team members are strong in their assigned events. The team plans to sweep the meet as they did last year. Before heading out to the arena, Mr. Fraser calls a brief team meeting in the locker room where he cannot be overheard. Once everyone is dressed and assembled, Mr. Fraser announces, "I hear that the competition is better this year, but I have no first-hand knowledge of this. When we get out there, I want you to remember only one thing. That is, if you don't win, all the work you've done to get here doesn't matter." The team cheers, agreeing with their coach 100%. Mentioning one other thing, Mr. Fraser adds, "They say it doesn't matter whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game." I say, if it doesn't matter, they wouldn't keep score. The team cheers again, and everyone is ready to win. Mr. Fraser tells the team, "Okay, let's get out there and do exactly what we've been training for." Walking into the arena, the team settles at their bench. As the other teams arrive, the bleachers are filling with spectators. Among the spectators today is Dr. Noreen Brooks, the school superintendent. For some unknown reason, Mr. Crum, the principal, sneaks in to watch today's meet. Fortunately, for Mr. Crum, there is no discus thrown in indoor track. Mr. Zunde would normally kick Mr. Crum out of his arena, but, since Dr. Brooks is present, Mr. Crum is not likely to cause any problems. So, only for today, Mr. Zunde allows Mr. Crum to stay for the meet. Also present today is the football coach, Mr. Moreno, who is looking for a running back or free safety. Wanting to see how far his former athletes have come, Mr. Harris, the middle school track coach, is also attending the meet today. And, for some odd reason, sitting in the bleachers is Jimmy O'Brien, along with his father. The first meet of the year is when each coach demonstrates to the division the talent that they have. Word travels fast, and Mr. Fraser is eager to show everyone what he has this year. The competing teams, also expecting to show what they have, arrive this year with a few new trainers. Among them, working for Centerville, is Brad Evans. Evans, as it was discovered by Mr. Fraser and Barbara, ran for Centerville a few years ago and is now working for the team as an intern. Evans walks around, maintaining his distance from the other team's benches, taking a look at the competition. Kathy, Paula, and Barbara, however, are not walking around analyzing the competition. While the other teams are getting settled, the three university teammates race against each other in a 220-yard dash just for fun. This, of course, attracts a lot of attention, especially that of Mr. Ruff. Mr. Ruff clearly knows the girls are not eligible to run, so his blood pressure is rising. Seeing the girls dressed in the team uniform, Mr. Ruff is on his way to blowing a gasket. Sure enough, after the girls' race, as Kathy, Paula, and Barbara are walking back to the team bench, Mr. Ruff is yelling at the ceiling, throwing his hands in the air. As usual, in indoor track, the 40-yard dash preliminaries is the first event of the day. Running for Northside High School will be Eddie Hoffer and Eddie's brother, John. It is no secret that they will be up against McCutcheon. Mark reminds Eddie about their encounter with McCutcheon last summer on the beach when Mark messed with McCutcheon and his teammates' minds. Eddie and Mark discuss a few of the ways they will distract McCutcheon this year. Mark tells Eddie to remind McCutcheon that, on this track, they have switched to metric time this season. Kathy and Paula are both in on the plan, which will make everything sound more official. Mark will save his ace in the hole for the 4x440 relay. The call for the 40-yard dash preliminaries is made, and the runners head to the starting line. Kathy and Paula join the three contestants, as Mr. Fraser makes his way to the finish line. Eddie points out McCutcheon to John. John has heard about McCutcheon, and can't wait to see the ways in which Eddie and Mark mess with his head. Eddie and Hoffer are in the first heat. John, an unseeded runner, will be in the second heat. With a few minutes before the race, the starter, who is familiar with Northside's psychological warfare, listens closely to hear what distraction techniques the team has come up with this year. As McCutcheon walks up to the starting line with his teammates, Kathy tells John, "Remember, we're using metric stopwatches this year, so you don't have to run as fast to get a good time." Eddie, acting as if he overheard Kathy's comment, mentions, "That's right. Thanks. I almost forgot about that." Sure enough, McCutcheon asks Eddie, "What's all this about a metric stopwatch?" Eddie explains, "I can't believe you guys haven't heard about that. They are changing over to metric time this year in a lot of the meets. Instead of 60 minutes in 1 hour, there are 100 minutes in 1 hour. Also, instead of 60 seconds in a minute, there are 100 seconds in a minute. But the tenths are still the same." McCutcheon asks, "What difference does that make?" Eddie tells him, "Your times will seem slower. So, you don't have to run as fast to get a good time. Do the conversions in your head. You'll see." Eddie just gave McCutcheon a bunch of conflicting information, which is sure to wear his brain out before the gun goes off. The starter, listening to every word, has to turn around to conceal his laughter. The starter tells the first heat to get ready, and Kathy heads over to the finish line to be there when Eddie wins. The starter grins and tells Eddie, "I bought a metric starting pistol this year. You'll see it in the spring." Eddie asks, "Does it make a metric sound?" The starter tells Eddie, "It does. And metric sound travels a little faster, so you guys will be out of the blocks quicker." Eddie and the starter have a good laugh, clearly noticed by Mr. Ruff over at the finish line. The starter announces, "On your marks," then announces, "Set." The buzzer sounds, marking the beginning of this year's indoor track season and the race. Eddie is out of the blocks first and takes an early lead. No one else has broken from the rest of the field 10 yards into the race. McCutcheon, still wondering about metric time, was distracted before the race began. At 20 yards, Hoffer breaks from the pack. McCutcheon, right behind Hoffer, is surprisingly a little faster this year. At the finish line, Eddie crosses first, leaving the rest of the pack far behind. Hoffer takes second place, and McCutcheon third place. One of the timekeepers, speaking of Eddie, mentions to another, "Wow. That was seriously fast." The second heat quickly gets ready. This is John's debut performance. Kathy makes sure John's blocks are set correctly, allowing John to focus on the race. The starter announces, "On your marks," then announces, "Set." The buzzer is sounded, and the second heat is out of the blocks. John takes an early lead, quickly breaking from the pack, following in the footsteps of his brother. The rest of the pack is left far behind. At the finish line, the second heat appears to have been a one-man race. John wins his heat, with his competition crossing the finish line far behind him. Mr. Fraser, giving John a high five, tells him, "Congratulations. You made it into the final." John and Mr. Fraser head back to the bench, awaiting to see who else will be in the final. After a few more events, the call is made for the 440-yard dash. For Northside, Braden, Tessa, and Erika will be running this race. Tessa and Erika always have a bit of a rivalry going on. Closely matched in ability, either one could win the race if Braden was not running. As he is heading toward the starting line, Braden exclaims, "I don't even know why they keep making me run the same race. I always win. I'm kicking ass today. Ain't nobody in this state faster than me." Seeing Mr. Crum in the bleachers, remembering that he has no jurisdiction on the track, Braden yells out louder, "I'm kicking everyone's ass today." Braden, seeing Jimmy O'Brien and his father in the bleachers, points to Jimmy O'Brien, exclaiming, "And keep your puny little ass out of my way, Junior." After listening to Braden, everyone knows this is going to be an exciting race. The starter announces, "On your marks." The starter then announces, "Set." Braden is more than ready to go. The buzzer sounds and, continuing in the Amazon tradition, Tessa and Erika both let out a loud Amazon war cry. Braden, in lane one, takes no time to claim the lead. Halfway through the race, after the first lap, Erika is in second place, with Tessa not far behind. Bobby B, standing in the middle of the oval track where the field events are held, watches as Erika, his girlfriend, is delivering an awesome performance. As they come around the final curve and approach the finish, Braden will clearly win the race. Erika and Tessa fight it out for second place. Braden takes first place, delivering exactly what he promised. Erika, who beats Tessa this time by only one step, takes second place. But, delivering an awesome performance today, Tessa is happy with third place. Once the race is over, Braden still apparently has a lot of energy. Braden exclaims, "I just kicked everyone's ass in the state again. And I'm going to do it again. And again. Who's next? Step right up." Even though there is a second heat, it's not likely that anyone will come close to Braden's performance. Mr. Fraser gives Braden a high five, telling him, "I clocked you at a 47.5. Awesome." Tessa and Erika walk over, also receiving high fives from their coach, Kathy, and Paula. Kathy tells Erika she ran a 54.4, and Paula tells Tessa she ran a 54.5. Mr. Fraser is ecstatic with the times, but, with one more heat to go, it is not known where Erika and Tessa will place. After a few more events, the call is made for the 40-yard dash final. Eddie, Hoffer, and John all head to the starting line. McCutcheon made the final, along with one of his teammates and a runner from Riverdale. No one from Madison made the final, which has come to be expected. Eddie tells McCutcheon, "Hey, this is my brother John. I just wanted you to meet him." McCutcheon, at a loss for words, replies, "I didn't know you had a brother." Eddie tells McCutcheon, "Yeah. And, by the way, I met your older brother last semester at the university." McCutcheon asks, "Oh yeah. How did you meet him?" Eddie tells him, "I ran against him in the 440-yard dash time trial with the university's team last fall. I kicked his ass. So did Mark, Kathy, and Paula." Hearing that news certainly destroys McCutcheon's confidence in the upcoming final. The starter tells the runners, "On your marks," which comes as a surprise to McCutcheon, who was busy talking with Eddie. Eddie, however, is more than ready to get this race over with. Eddie tells his brother, "Good luck. You and Hoffer should take second and third place." Eddie's comment further bothers McCutcheon, who was just informed by Eddie that he will lose. The starter announces, "Set." Once the runners are set, the buzzer sounds. Almost everyone is quick out of the blocks. It appears one of the runners was caught off guard, getting off to a slow start. At 20 yards, the pack separates into three groups. Eddie is alone in the first group. Hoffer and John are in the second group. The third group, led by McCutcheon, is a few yards behind. At the finish line, Eddie takes first place. Hoffer takes second place, with Eddie's brother, John, taking third place. With the 40-yard dash final completed, Eddie and Mark walk over to compete in the shot put. This comes as a surprise to Mr. Ruff, the Centerville coach, who has had about all he can take from Northside. Although the rumor has been dispelled, Mr. Ruff somehow still thinks Bobby B is a college student, and throwing the shot put is how he makes his tuition money. Seeing Eddie and Mark competing in the shot put just seems to irritate Mr. Ruff. This is because, with Eddie and Mark on the shot put pad, Centerville will likely be excluded from winning anything in that event today. Bobby B shows Eddie the shot put, telling him, "Remember, the shot put is special, and it must be treated with great care. Be very careful with it." Eddie replies, "You got it, bro." Eddie steps up to the shot put pad, handling the shot put more like the steel ball that it is rather than the special field implement Bobby B makes it out to be. After making his first throw, Eddie quickly moves into second place. Beating the competing teams by a significant margin, Eddie asks Bobby B, "So, how's that?" Bobby B jokingly replies, "Not bad, if you were a freshman." Eddie is now in second place, not bad for his first competitive throw. Mark is up next. On his way to the shot put pad, Mark asks the Centerville shot put guy, "Hey, have you seen the shot put around here somewhere? They told me I have to throw it." Not amused in the least, the Centerville shot put guy points to the shot put laying on the ground, telling Mark, "It's right there." Picking up the shot put, Mark tells the Centerville shot put guy, "Wow, it's really heavy." Mark makes his first throw, clearly giving the competition the impression he's done this at least once before. Mark's throw comes in a few inches shy of Eddie's first throw. As expected, the Centerville shot put guy is annoyed by Mark. And so is Mr. Ruff, but that is par for the course. Eddie and Mark make their requisite three throws, easily taking second and third place in this event. Neither Eddie nor Mark expected to beat Bobby B in the shot put. With a throw that could easily take the gold medal at the state invitational meet, Bobby B took first place today. The goal for Eddie and Mark today was to secure second and third place, which they easily accomplished. In other events, Mitchell takes first place in the mile. Johnson takes second place, and Akinmola takes third place. Mark takes first place in the 220-yard dash. John Elliott takes second place, and a freshman, Lucius Hill, takes third place. Akinmola is in the lead in the high jump and expects to win. Mr. Fraser, to say the least, is ecstatic. Thus far, in this meet, Northside has taken first, second, and third place in every individual running event. This, of course, sorely irritates Mr. Ruff, whose team expected to do a lot better this year. And the Riverdale coach, Mr. Lyons, is not too happy either. Usually taking second and third place in a few individual events, thus far, Mr. Lyons is empty-handed. Fortunately, with a few more relay events coming up, and with only one entry allowed per school, Northside cannot take first, second, and third place. The last event of the day is the 4x440 relay. This year, the relay team's standard order is Braden, who is the lead man, followed by Johnson, then Mark, with Eddie being the anchorman. The order, however, is subject to change. Today, Mark will be running in whichever leg McCutcheon is running. And if Braden finds a specific as he wants to kick, Mr. Fraser will allow the team to change the order. With four runners capable of running a sub-50 second quarter mile, the order doesn't really matter too much. They will likely win every 4x440 relay competition this year. The call is made for the final event of the day. Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson head to the starting line along with Mr. Fraser, Kathy, Paula, Barbara, and Wendy. With a few minutes before the race starts, Mark tells Braden and Johnson to stand off to the side, along with Wendy and Barbara, and act like they are not running in the race. Mark tells Kathy and Paula, who are dressed in the team uniform, to stand on the track with him and Eddie. Mr. Fraser, clearly understanding what Mark is up to, laughs to himself, wondering how Mark comes up with this stuff. Mark's rearrangement of the personnel causes an immediate objection by Mr. Ruff, who saw the girls running a practice race before the meet began. Mr. Ruff tells Mr. Lyons, "Will you just look at that? Those two girls graduated last year, and here they are again. They are not eligible to run." Mr. Lyons, seeing what Mr. Ruff sees, replies, "We've got to report this. They've gone far enough. This is just too blatant." Since the starting line is near the bleachers, Mr. Crum cannot help but to overhear the turmoil. It clearly appears that, from every vantage point, the gold medal team of Mark, Paula, Kathy, and Eddie are about to run the 4x440 relay. And, to complicate matters, the Amazon chant begins, originating from someone in the bleachers. Mr. Ruff and Mr. Lyons approach the head timekeeper and voice their objection. Mr. Ruff, telling the head timekeeper in no uncertain terms, "Those two girls are not eligible to run. They've graduated." The timekeeper, who does not have the official event roster in his hands, tells Mr. Ruff and Mr. Lyons, "I'll check into it." Before the timekeeper can go and obtain the roster, Mr. Crum, hearing the heated discussion, comes down from the bleachers. Mr. Crum joins in the discussion, telling the timekeeper, "I'm the principal of this school. I couldn't help but overhear your conversation. And yes, this gentleman is correct. Those two girls graduated last year. I can attest to that fact myself." Mr. Ruff exclaims, "See that? I knew it." The timekeeper then excuses himself to locate the official event roster. Meanwhile, in the center of the oval track, Mr. Fraser, standing with Mark, Eddie, Kathy, and Paula, comments, "Wow. Listen to them. It sounds like they are a little upset." Mr. Zunday, seeing the commotion, walks over from the field area, wondering what is going on. Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Zunday, "Mark had last year's relay team stand together, making it look like they are ready to run the 4x440. Mr. Ruff and Lyons saw it and jumped to the wrong conclusion. They are both ready to blow a gasket. Now, Mr. Crum has gotten involved." Mr. Zunday, who always likes this kind of amusement, tells Mr. Fraser, "Let's see how far they take it. This should be quite entertaining." Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Zunday, "You've really got to hand it to Mark. This is his best one yet." To add fuel to the fire, Mark suggests, "Hey, let's practice a few handoffs, like the good old days. Last year's 4x440 relay champions think that's a great idea," so Kathy walks over to Wendy and gets the baton. Kathy and Paula get on the track, showing off their handoff skills. Kathy hands off to Eddie, as they have many times before in practice and in competition. Mark, looking over at Mr. Ruff, gets the evil eye. Mark smiles as he takes the baton and hands off to Paula. Mr. Crum, seeing the girls practicing their handoffs, knows for sure something is amiss. Wanting to be the star of the show and in the spotlight, Mr. Crum tells Mr. Ruff and Mr. Lyons, "I'll take care of this." Mr. Crum approaches Mr. Fraser, telling him, "The girls are not eligible to run. They've graduated last year." Mr. Fraser replies, "Don't you think I know that?" Mr. Crum exclaims, "Then, get them off the track." Mr. Fraser quietly asks, "Why?" In no uncertain terms, Mr. Crum tells Mr. Fraser, "Because they're not allowed to run. Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Crumb, "You already said that. So, what's your point?" Mr. Zunday walks up, interrupting the conversation between Mr. Crumb and Mr. Fraser, telling Mr. Crumb, "Crumb, get out of my arena." "Now?" Mr. Crumb exclaims, "I'm not leaving. There has been a violation of the rules here." Mr. Zunday asks Mr. Crumb, "And just exactly what rule has been violated?" Confident in his accusation, Mr. Crumb replies, "Kathy Karakova and Paula Giovanni are not eligible to run. They are on the track." Intending to irritate Mr. Crumb, Mr. Zunday tells him, "So what? That's not a violation of any rule." The school superintendent, Dr. Brooks, who knows her cousin, Mr. Zunday, very well, sits back on the bleachers taking a few mental notes. Dr. Brooks watches carefully as Mr. Crumb proceeds to make a fool of himself. And, of course, Mr. Zunday's carefully worded responses to Mr. Crumb's outbursts do nothing but infuriate Mr. Crumb even more. The timekeeper returns with the official event roster and calls the coaches together for a meeting. Mr. Crumb invites himself to the meeting, ready to set everyone straight. The timekeeper asks Mr. Ruff again, "Now, what exactly is the nature of your complaint?" Mr. Ruff exclaims, "The girls are not eligible to run." The timekeeper asks Mr. Fraser, "What are the girls' names?" Mr. Fraser answers, "Kathy Karakova and Paula Giovanni. They are my assistant coaches." The timekeeper asks Mr. Fraser, "So, who's running in the 4x440 relay?" Mr. Fraser replies, "Axel Braden, Eric Johnson, Mark Svoboda, and Eddie Boganskaya." Pointing them out, Mr. Fraser explains, "Two of them are standing over there with their girlfriends, and the other two are standing over there with their girlfriends." The timekeeper tells the other coaches, "I really fail to see any problem here." Realizing that he made a complete fool of himself, Mr. Ruff walks over to his 4x440 relay team, telling them they were going to have the girls run, but I wouldn't let them get away with it. So, they made some last-minute substitutions. Mr. Ruff's relay team believes him, but that's par for the course. Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Crumb, "Crumb, you've caused enough problems today. Get out of my arena." Mr. Crumb refuses and takes his seat on the bleachers. Dr. Brooks, the school superintendent, makes a mental note of Mr. Crumb's attempt to undermine the team and discredit the school. Mr. Fraser whispers to Mark, "That was a good one." Mr. Zunday wanted to see how far it would go. Mark replies, "It looks like they took it to the moon and back. And they should suspend Mr. Crumb for that one. Just saying." For once, with the upper hand, McCutcheon tells Mark, "Did you guys really think you would get away with that?" Avoiding the question, Mark asks McCutcheon, "Didn't you listen to me last summer?" Not knowing to what Mark is referring, McCutcheon asks, "What are you talking about?" Mark, pointing to a red spot on McCutcheon's leg, tells him, "It looks like you got bit by a prickly sea spider. The bullseye appearance gives it away. It's going to cause your tendons to rot away." Looking at the back of his leg, McCutcheon begins to get worried. There is a rather large red spot on McCutcheon's leg, which appears to be an infected spider bite. Mark shakes his head and tells McCutcheon, "I hope it doesn't tear during the race." Starting the race 15 minutes late, the starter tells everyone, "Okay, let's get this race underway." Letting everyone know who's boss, Braden exclaims, "Here it comes. The biggest ass kicking of the afternoon. I hope everyone's ready." Mark tells Eddie and Johnson, McCrutchen's probably their anchor, "I want to run last." Already receiving permission from Mr. Fraser to switch if they want, Eddie replies, "Sure. But we'll probably win the race before McCrutcheon receives his baton." Johnson tells Mark, "He might have a point. Let's go for it. We might be able to win before McCrutcheon gets his baton." Eddie and Mark tell Johnson that they are in on the plan. The starter, who is somewhat annoyed at Mr. Ruff's temper tantrum, tells everyone to get behind their blocks. Apparently, the controversy has spread to the runners, who are discussing the issue among themselves, rather than focusing on the race. Irritating Mr. Ruff further, the starter announces, "Let's get moving, or I'm going to give first, second, and third place in this race to Northside." Braden is behind his blocks, exclaiming, "You heard what he said. Let's get this as kicking underway." The starter announces, "On your marks." Looking at the runners as they get positioned, the starter yells out to the Centerville runner, in lane 3, "Son, this is a relay race. I suggest you procure a baton as fast as possible." Eddie looks over at lane 3 and tells Mark, "Hey, that's McCrutchen, Jr." The crowd laughs hysterically, just seeing a runner attempting to begin a relay race without a baton in his hand. Evans, Centerville's intern, quickly delivers the baton to Jeff McCutcheon, Todd McCutcheon's very inexperienced younger brother. The starter raises his voice and announces, "For the second time, and hopefully the last time today, on your marks." He quickly announces, "Set." Taking longer than usual to start the race, the starter looks over the field a few times to make sure the runners are in the set position and all have their batons. The starter sounds the buzzer, and the final race of the day is underway. As the runners leave the blocks, Mark looks over at McCutcheon to somehow belabor the point that his brother was going to run without a baton. Instead, he catches McCutcheon examining his legs for prickly sea spider bites. McCutcheon, now in auto-self-destruct mode, is in no further need of distraction today. Braden's enthusiasm quickly shifts from his mouth to his legs. It only takes one lap for Braden to gain a significant lead. Far behind, Riverdale, Centerville, and Madison are all running at the same pace, with no one breaking away. On the second lap, Mr. Fraser yells out, "He's clocking at a sub-50 pace." Everyone on the team knows that Braden can easily break 50 seconds in the quarter mile. Mr. Fraser made the announcement only to annoy Mr. Ruff. Braden hands off to Johnson and casually walks off the track as the other runners come around the curve to the transition zone. During the other team's handoffs, as each runner passes by, Braden kicks his foot in the direction in which the runners are running, letting everyone know they just got their ass kicked. McCutcheon Jr. delivered a less than competitive time for Centerville, running his leg in a dismal 77 seconds. Meanwhile, Johnson is on the back straightaway, working to gain a significant lead. Johnson really wants Mark to be finished with the final leg before McCutcheon receives his baton. As Johnson completes his first lap, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Can you believe it? Another sub-50 quarter is on the way." Braden exclaims, "This is the major league as kicking of the day." At the end of the second lap, Johnson is 30 seconds ahead of the second-place Riverdale team. Centerville and Madison are nearly tied for last place. Johnson hands off to Eddie, whose job is to also deliver a sub-50 second quarter mile. Eddie, now more than one lap ahead of Centerville, begins to widen the lead. Long after Eddie completes his first lap, the Centerville runner receives his baton. Riverdale is doing a little better, also gaining ground over Centerville and Madison. As for Madison, they might stand a chance to beat Centerville this year if their anchorman can beat McCutcheon. Mark gets on the track, staring at McCutcheon, who will be on the sidelines for a while. As Eddie comes around the final curve on his last lap, Mark is ready to deliver the performance of the afternoon. Eddie hands off to Mark, who has his eyes on lapping the Centerville runner. Mr. Fraser exclaims, "That was a 47-second quarter mile. Did everyone see that?" Mark takes off like a wild man, increasing the lead over Centerville. With all eyes focused on Mark, not many have noticed that the Madison runner has just taken a clear lead over the Centerville runner. Now in last place, Centerville's coach, Mr. Ruff, is yelling and screaming in an attempt to get his runner to run faster. When Mark completes his first lap, the Centerville runner, on the final lap of the third leg, has just entered the first curve. Mark sprints like he is running the 40-yard dash, attempting to catch the Centerville runner. On the back straightaway, Mark gains significant ground. Around the final turn, Mark gains a little more ground. Out of the final turn, Mark sprints to the finish, passing the Centerville runner 2 seconds before McCutcheon, Centerville's anchorman, receives his baton. Mark walks off the track and back to the finish line. Mr. Fraser and the rest of the 4x440 relay team celebrate their victory, giving each other high fives. Mark, however, is standing to the inside of the track, waiting patiently as McCutcheon completes his first lap. McCutcheon and his coach, Mr. Ruff, know exactly what just happened. Centerville just got their head handed to them. If this is any indication of what will happen for the rest of the season, Centerville will have a lot of work to do. But Mr. Ruff does not quite see it that way. Before the race is even over, Mr. Ruff walks over to the Riverdale coach, Mr. Lyons. Mr. Ruff tells Mr. Lyons, last spring, at the state meet, I was having a conversation with Rudy Parker, the Henderson coach. We got a good close-up look at these guys. It's pretty clear that they are all taking steroids. Mr. Lyons replies, I'm not stupid. I saw what just happened. You're probably right. Mr. Ruff comments, they are even bigger and faster this year. Mr. Ruff probably should have kept his mouth shut. Mark, the master of psychological warfare, just heard all of what was said between Mr. Ruff and Mr. Lyons. Mr. Ruff watches as McCutcheon, in last place, crosses the finish line with a dismal time. Worst of all, Centerville was just beaten by Madison. Mark passes by McCutcheon, who says nothing to Mark, but nothing had to be said. McCutcheon knows that he and his team just got their ass kicked. Mark, however, cannot remain silent. Passing by McCutcheon, Mark whispers to him, steroids. That's where it's at, man. Steroids. Mark walks away, planting the seed that will likely grow to be a jungle of controversy by the end of the season. McCutcheon is sure to tell his coach what he heard. Mark exchanges high fives with his relay team members as they head back to the team bench together. With the awards ceremony just a few minutes away, the team has an early celebration. Mark tells Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday what he heard of the verbal exchange between Mr. Ruff and Mr. Lyons regarding the team taking steroids. Mr. Zunday, recalling his run-in with Mr. Ruff at last year's Spring State Invitational meet, is not surprised at all that Mr. Ruff has again raised this issue. The meet announcer tells everyone that the awards ceremony will be in 5 minutes. Since the arena is full with spectators today, the announcer instructs the runners to assemble at their designated team area. Mr. Fraser informs the team that they have won the gold medal in every event. The team, however, already knows this. What they don't know is that the team took all the silver medals in the individual track events as well. Standing behind the podium, the meet announcer addresses the runners, saying, "When your name is called, I want you to walk up to the appropriate tier for your award. Once the awards are distributed, you will then stand behind your coach." The group of athletes standing behind their coach is the coach's reward for the meet. To each of the left and right of the podium stand two coaches, spread out in the center of the oval track where the field events are held. Kathy, Paula, Barbara, and Wendy stand with Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday to the far left side of the oval. In the 40-yard dash, Eddie takes the gold medal, Hoffa the silver, and John takes the bronze. In the 220-yard dash, Mark takes the gold medal, Elliot takes the silver, and Hill takes the bronze. It's no secret that Hill, a freshman, will be one of the team's stars soon. Braden takes the gold medal in the 440-yard dash, Erica takes the silver, and Tessa the bronze. It seems that there are not a lot of athletes on the competing teams who are strong in the 440-yard dash. The poor performance of Centerville, Riverdale, and Madison in the 4x400 relay event attests to that fact. In both the mile and the 880-yard run, Mitchell takes the gold medal, Johnson takes the silver, and Akinmola takes the bronze. In the relay events, Northside takes the gold medal in every event. Even the mile medley relay team, comprised of all freshmen this year, takes the gold medal. Riverdale, as usual, takes the bulk of the silver medals in the relay events. As the awards continue, Mr. Fraser's group is getting to be, by far, the largest. In the field events, Bobby B. takes the gold medal in the shot put. Never throwing the shot put in competition before, Eddie takes the silver medal. Mark, who has thrown the shot put a few times in middle school competition, takes the bronze. Never competing in the high jump, Akinmola takes the gold medal in that event today. Unfortunately, the silver and bronze medals in the high jump went to the other teams. Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunde will have to find a solution to that problem for future meets. After the ceremony, Eddie and Mark walk over to meet their parents along with Kathy and Paula. Kathy and Eddie have not seen each other much during this meet. Neither have Mark and Paula. Kathy and Paula have to work again during the meets, so the couples don't have as many opportunities to hang out between events. Another celebration breaks out, with the winners showing off their medals to everyone around. Having her eyes set on pizza, Kathy suggests that everyone go out to the Italian restaurant for a late lunch. Mr. Harris comes down from the bleachers to meet the athletes he coached years ago. Quite impressed by their performance, Mr. Harris mentions, "You guys have definitely come a long way. When you left in 8th grade, I knew you were good. I had no idea you were this good." Braden tells Mr. Harris, "We've been kicking ass for years. We've been going to state since our freshman year." Mr. Harris tells Braden, "When you were in 8th grade, I remember you being unstoppable." Mr. Harris asks Mark, "Are you still messing with heads?" Mark replies, "Yeah. Did you see that mess before the 4x400 relay began? That was my fault." Curiously, Mr. Harris asks, "What was up with that?" Mark explains the situation, telling Mr. Harris, "Me, Eddie, Paula, and Kathy went to state in the last 2 years in the 4x400 relay. We won the gold medal in the last 2 indoor and spring seasons." Mark tells Mr. Harris, "When we stood together, they thought we were going to run the relay race together, but Kathy and Paula have graduated." Mr. Harris mentions, "Kathy and Paula. I knew they looked vaguely familiar. They used to come to all the meets when they were in middle school." Mark tells Mr. Harris, "So, McCrutchen's coach, Mr. Ruff, blew a gasket." Mark and Eddie introduce Kathy and Paula to Mr. Harris. Mr. Harris immediately recognizes Kathy as the student who accompanies Mr. Fraser on his yearly visit to the last middle school home meet of the year. Mr. Harris mentions, "I heard about some controversy about whether girls were allowed to run track." Kathy tells Mr. Harris, "Yeah, big time. But we got to run track for 2 years. Those were the best times." Paula comments, "Yeah, that was the biggest mess you can imagine." Mr. Harris asks, "So, you've both graduated?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. We both got track scholarships and run for the university now. We also got internships and help out with the team." Learning what happens with the students after they graduate, Mr. Harris replies, "Wow. That is really awesome." Mr. Fraser walks over to join the conversation. Mr. Harris tells Mr. Fraser, "So, this is what you do with all the talent I send you every year." Mr. Fraser replies, "Yeah. They are really good. Thank you. What do you got coming up for me this year?" With some good news, Mr. Harris replies, "We have a few good sprinters and a good distance guy in the 8th grade." With the high jump being the team's weakest event this year, Mr. Fraser jokingly replies, "That sounds great. Send me a good high jumper if you can." Quite puzzled, Mr. Harris asks, didn't Joe Sepulveda try out for the team? Recognizing the name, Mr. Frazier replies, I know the name from gym class. But, no. He didn't try out for the team. Mr. Harris mentions, that's surprising. You should look into it. Last year, he didn't lose a single meet. Mr. Frazier now has someone to hunt down next week. Sometime during the conversation between Mr. Frazier and Mr. Harris, Kathy and Paula have arranged for the whole team to get pizza. Not wanting to leave anyone out, Kathy tells Mr. Frazier and Mr. Harris, the whole team is getting pizza. Mr. Zunday is coming. And you guys are coming too, right? Looking at Mr. Frazier, Mr. Harris replies, sure, I'll come. Mr. Frazier tells Kathy, count me in. Kathy didn't leave them much choice, but they are both glad to go with the team to get pizza. On the way out of the arena, Mr. Ruff tells Mr. Crumb, congratulations on your awesome victory. If we all took steroids, maybe we'd win as many medals as your school. Mr. Crumb chuckles and asks, what's this about steroids? Mr. Ruff tells Mr. Crumb, just look at your team. No one is naturally that big and fast. And they've even admitted it. Mr. Crumb, looking around to see who is watching him, informs Mr. Ruff, I'll look into it. Acting quite disgusted, Mr. Ruff replies, yeah, as if that's going to do any good. Steroids really tilts the odds in your favor. And if I remember correctly, you weren't supposed to take everything. Anyone watching the exchange between Mr. Crumb and Mr. Ruff clearly gets the impression that there is more to the conversation than meets the eye. Mr. Crumb now suspects that Mr. Frazier and the track team is up to something illegal. Mr. Crumb will probably be searching the school policy manual come Monday morning for some sort of rule to enforce. Everyone meets at the pizzeria at around 2 p.m. Fortunately, for Joe, this is the slow time of the day. The lunch crowd is on their way out, and the dinner crowd has a few hours before they begin to arrive. Eddie and Kathy arrive first and walk in. Joe yells out from behind the counter, hey, did you guys win? Kathy replies, yeah. We won everything. Joe asks, where's Mark and Paula? Eddie replies, they are coming, with the whole team and our coaches. Joe tells Eddie and Kathy, the dining room is all cleared out. You guys can sit there. Knowing the track team, Joe asks, should I start making some pizzas? Kathy tells him, yeah. Probably a few dozen. Joe gets moving, tossing some pizza dough, preparing for the crowd. The team piles in, along with their coaches and some of the parents. Everyone on the team has at least one medal around their neck today. The waitress, Ariana, volunteers to stay over since there is a crowd. Joe is glad to have her stay, and so is Ariana. Ariana really enjoys serving the track team because they are so happy and full of energy. They all have a seat in the formal dining room, still celebrating their victory earlier today. Ariana takes everyone's order, which can be summed up as pizza for everyone. Joe finally gets to meet Mr. Frazier. Mr. Frazier tells Joe, my team tells me that pizza makes them run faster. Joe tells Mr. Frazier, I don't know about that. But when they are all here together, they really have a lot of good energy, especially when they bring their girls. Just look at them. Mr. Frazier looks around the dining room, never remembering seeing the team this happy before. Perhaps Mr. Frazier will let them get a little more pizza this season. He figures pizza should be okay, just as long as it's not consumed immediately before the 440-yard dash. While they are all enjoying their victory lunch, a familiar face walks in. Kathy, who can see the pizza counter from her seat, tells Paula, deja vu. It's back. Paula turns around and sees none other than Paul Mahoney. Kathy mentions to Paula, they must have let him out of the sanitarium. Paula reminds Kathy, we saw him here last spring. He actually acted normal. Kathy replies, yeah, that's right. He even apologized. Mahoney orders two slices of pizza and a drink, and takes a seat on the informal side of the restaurant. As the track team celebrates, Mahoney sits in his seat alone, occasionally peering into the dining room, taking in all that is going on. During lunch, Kathy gets everyone's attention by hitting her spoon on her glass. Kathy tells everyone, "Hey, everybody. I have an announcement to make." Everyone, including Mr. Fraser, is at a loss about what Kathy is talking about. The room goes silent, and Kathy tells Arianna, "Hey, go and get Joe." Everyone now has to wait a minute for Joe, who is working the counter. Mark asks Paula, "What's this about?" Paula replies, "I have no idea. But you know Kathy. Like Eddie always says, she's always full of surprises." Joe walks into the dining room. The room goes quiet again, and Kathy announces, "Okay, now for my announcement." Wasting no time, and getting right to the point, Kathy announces, "Eddie and I are getting married." Upon hearing the good news, everyone in the room cheers. Mark and Paula are surprised, but not surprised. Paula tells Mark, "Wow. I was half expecting this someday, but not this fast." Mr. Fraser, however, is quite surprised. He knows Eddie and Kathy have been dating, but did not realize their relationship was this serious. Bobby B. yells out, "You may now kiss the bride." The tribe starts hitting their spoons on their glasses. Kathy and Eddie kiss each other. The official announcement has now been made. Sometime after Eddie graduates, the couple will get married. After lunch, everyone gets ready to head out. Mr. Fraser had no idea that the team spirit goes far beyond the track. Before everyone leaves, Mr. Fraser announces, "May I have your attention for a moment?" The crowd quiets down, and Mr. Fraser tells everyone, "I just want to thank you for asking Mr. Harris, Mr. Zunday, and myself to join you today. This has been the best regular season meet I can ever remember, and the first time everyone on the team has walked away with a medal." Turning his attention to Kathy and Eddie, Mr. Fraser tells them, "And we are all honored that you both chose this occasion to announce your plans and invited us to be present." The crowd cheers again, and Mr. Fraser tells everyone, "I hope you all have a great weekend, and we'll see you on Monday." The crowd claps and cheers, showing their appreciation for their coaches. One by one, everyone heads out. Eddie and Kathy head back to the school to get Kathy's car, then head to Kathy's house. When they walk inside Kathy's house, Kathy's father asks, "So, how did the meet go?" Kathy tells him, "We won everything." Thinking Kathy is exaggerating a bit, Kathy's father asks, "Everything?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. We got all the gold medals and all the silver medals, and most of the bronze ones too. Well, except for the relay races. We got all the gold medals in the relays, but we can only have one entry. Oh, and except for the high jump. Some other team got the silver and bronze." And Mr. Ruff is really ticked off. Kathy's father replies, "Thanks for the fair warning. I can't wait to hear what he complains about this year." Kathy continues, telling her dad, "And you should have seen Braden. After he finished his leg in the relay, he was kicking his foot in the air like he was kicking someone's ass, as the other runners handed off their batons." Kathy's father tells her, "It sounds like you had a lot of fun." Kathy replies, "Yeah, but what Braden did is only the beginning. Me, Eddie, Paula, and Mark were standing together before the 4x440 relay because Mark told us to. And so Mark told Braden and Johnson to stand way aside with Wendy and Barbara. And Mr. Ruff thought me and Paula were going to run in the race, so he blew a head gasket. And Mr. Crum got involved, and Mr. Zunday told him to leave, but he wouldn't." Kathy's mother tells Kathy, "It sounds like you have a lot of energy." Kathy tells her mother, "Yeah, sort of. Taking a deep breath, Kathy asks, "And so why does Mr. Zunday always call it my arena? It's not like he owns it." Kathy's father tells her, "It sort of is his arena. He had it installed." Kathy exclaims, "What?" Eddie asks, "Really?" Kathy's father explains, "Mr. Zunday works as a consultant in conjunction with the company who made the track. It's an experimental track, and the company comes out every month to check it. They've replaced the running surface once. So, technically, in a way, it is Mr. Zunday's arena." Eddie asks, "When did he put it in?" Kathy's father tells Eddie, "He had the track put in after the school board appointed him athletic director. The school board assigned the space to him, and Mr. Zunday had the track installed." In awe, Kathy exclaims, "Wow. I never knew that." Recalling a few of the run-ins between Mr. Crum and Mr. Zunday over the last few years, Kathy mentions, "No wonder Mr. Zunday always kicks Mr. Crum out. He always says, 'Crum, get out of my arena.' And it's so funny when he says that." Kathy's father tells her, "If I am not mistaken, the only part of that arena the school owns is the four locker rooms. The track, the bleachers, and team areas belong to the company, and it's all in Mr. Zunday's jurisdiction." Practicing for what she may have to say one day, Kathy says, "Crum, get out of Mr. Zunday's arena." "Hem. Crum, get out of my arena." Everyone laughs, knowing for sure that Kathy will surely use that line someday. Kathy and Eddie head out for the afternoon. Now that it's winter, Kathy wants to drive through the town behind the high school with Eddie. Kathy plans to show Eddie how beautiful the area is during the winter. Still looking for the perfect house, Kathy drives these roads to the university every day. There are many ways to get to the university through the town, and Kathy is getting to know them well. But today, she wants to take a drive with Eddie to see if they can find something that might be for sale, or stop in the park for a while. Eddie and Kathy drive down the road toward the high school. They head to the rarely visited small park in the town behind the high school, which has only a few parking places. This has been Kathy's new long way home since she got her car. Eddie drives into the parking lot, they get out of the car, and head to the sole bench in the park. Kathy tells Eddie, "When we buy a house here, we won't need to take the long way home anymore." Eddie tells Kathy, "If we get a house here, I'll build a park in the backyard." Kathy asks, "How do you mean, if we get a house?" Eddie tells Kathy, "There's not much for sale around here." Kathy tells Eddie, "But there will be. You'll see." Kathy sits on Eddie's lap, asking him, "Edward Boganskaya, will you marry me?" Eddie replies, "Katerina Karakova, I will marry you." Kathy and Eddie embrace, holding each other tightly in their arms. Kathy and Eddie get lost in their own world, showing their passion and expressing their love for each other. After a while, the sun begins to set. Eddie and Kathy have totally lost track of time. Once Kathy realizes that it is getting dark, she tells Eddie, "The long way home." "Wow. This was the long, long way." Holding Eddie, Kathy tells him, "I love you so much." Eddie tells Kathy, "I love you, sweetie." They don't exchange a lot of words, but not much needs to be said. They walk back to Eddie's car. Eddie tells Kathy, "Well, I guess we're not looking for houses today." Kathy replies, "Why not?" Eddie replies, "It's dark out. You can't see any of the houses from the road." Kathy sighs, telling Eddie, "That's why I like this area so much." Kathy asks Eddie, "Let's look anyway, just to see. Please?" They drive out of the park, meandering around the curvy roads of the town. Eddie mentions, "It seems like we're the only ones on the road." Kathy tells Eddie, "See? That's why it's so nice out here." Eddie points out, "Hey, there's a house for sale," as he drives past a house on a corner with a sign saying that it is for sale. Kathy screams out, "Go back. I missed it. Eddie finds a place to turn around. Arriving at the house, Eddie pulls the car off the road. Kathy and Eddie get out of the car and walk around. Since it is dark out, they can't see a whole lot. They walk up the road and find the driveway. Being a little adventurous, they walk up the driveway and see the house. Walking a little farther, Kathy whispers to Eddie, "Hey, look. A pool." Eddie whispers back, "We have to come back and look at this place sometime." Kathy replies, "Yeah. Like tomorrow." As they walk back down the driveway, Eddie suggests, "Let's get the phone number off the sign." They get back to the car, and Eddie gets his school notebook and a pen out of the trunk. Walking up to the sign, they find a smaller sign on top, advertising that there is an open house tomorrow. Eddie asks, "What's an open house?" Kathy tells him, "I think it's when you can just come and look." Eddie suggests, "We can drive by tomorrow and see." They now have a plan. Tomorrow they will drive by and get a better look. On the drive home, Eddie jokingly asks, "Hey, do you want to drive by 2nd Street and see if anything is for sale there?" Kathy, who hates 2nd Street because she thinks it is haunted, replies, "No. Just the thought of living anywhere near 2nd Street is enough to make me buy more gold and sell it through the portal." Thinking a little further and changing the subject, Kathy tells Eddie, "And hey, you'll be 18 in a few days. If we like it, we can buy the house together." Eddie replies, "Yeah, next Saturday." Kathy tells Eddie, "That would be a really nice birthday present." The next afternoon, Eddie and Kathy drive to the house they saw the previous night. Driving up the long driveway, they find a place to park near a separate detached garage. Looking around the outside, Eddie mentions, "Wow. It's all brick." Kathy asks, "Is that good?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. I don't want to spend the rest of my life painting siding." Before they go inside, Kathy takes a look at the pool, which is about 20 feet by 40 feet. Looking around, Kathy exclaims, "Wow, Eddie. Look. You can't see any other houses from here. It's all woods." It doesn't take Kathy too long to fall in love with the serene setting of the house. They walk up to the door and knock. The real estate agent, whose name is Tracy, opens the door, inviting them in. After greeting Kathy and Eddie, Tracy shows them around the inside of the house. Catching Kathy's eyes are the living room windows, which have no window treatments on them at all. With a view to the woods, no one could see into the windows even if they wanted to. Kathy whispers to Eddie, "You could walk around this house stark naked, and no one would see you." After seeing all the rooms, Eddie asks Kathy, "Do you like it?" Kathy replies, "What's not to like? It's awesome. With 3 bedrooms, 2.5 baths, a living room, dining room, kitchen, breakfast area, an office, and a separate laundry area, there is more than enough space for Kathy and Eddie. Best of all, the rooms are quite large compared with what Eddie and Kathy are used to." Tracy, the real estate agent, tells them that there is a full unfinished basement and a separate detached two-car garage in addition to the attached two-car garage. Eddie and Kathy go downstairs to take a look. The downstairs is divided into several large unfinished rooms. Eddie pays particular attention to the construction, which meets his strict standards. Eddie mentions to Kathy, "You can do anything you want with this space." Kathy replies, "It looks like a gym to me." The real estate agent then escorts Kathy and Eddie back upstairs and outside to the pool area. Kathy looks around the pool, which she really likes. Eddie notices that, unlike Kathy's pool, this pool has a heater. Noticing that the pool area is tiled, Kathy asks Eddie, "What kind of tile is this?" Eddie tells her, "It's travertine. It's a lot better than concrete." Even though it's winter, Kathy inspects the water and surrounding area for frogs. Fortunately, she finds no frogs today, dead or alive. Looking around at the woods, Kathy asks Tracy, how much land goes with the house? Tracy replies, 3 acres, which is about normal for this area. As they go back inside, Kathy asks Eddie, can we get it? Please, please, please. The real estate agent, seeing how young her clients are, asks, do you two guys have jobs? Bending the truth a bit, Kathy replies, Ed has got something on the way, but I have a job. After all, Kathy is a paid intern. The real estate agent informs them, you'll have to apply for a mortgage. Without a job, the bank is not likely going to give you a loan. Kathy informs the real estate agent, that's okay. We'll be paying cash for it. All of a sudden, the agent's eyes get wide open. Not expecting to hear that from a 17 and 18-year-old, the agent is at a loss for words. Learning psychological warfare techniques from Mark, Eddie pulls Kathy aside for a private conversation. Eddie winks at Kathy and whispers just loud enough for the agent to hear, she obviously doesn't recognize you. Kathy, knowing Eddie well, whispers back, good. I'm really tired of signing autographs. Eddie then whispers to Kathy, we should get Mark to take a look at the construction. Then we'll decide. Eddie and Kathy walk back to the agent, who overheard the private conversation that was clearly intended for her to hear. Eddie asks, hey, can I have my construction guy come take a look at it? The agent, now realizing Kathy and Eddie are serious buyers, replies, sure. I'll be here until 5 today. If that doesn't work, we can always set up an appointment with him to inspect it. Kathy tells the agent, we'll be back in about an hour. Kathy and Eddie thank the agent and leave to hunt down Mark. Eddie finds Mark, who is doing little more than rearranging the tools in his truck, as he is waiting for Paula. Eddie and Kathy explain to Mark that they've found a house, and they want him to take a look at it. Mark asks, how did you guys get the money to buy a house? Kathy tells Mark, the same way Paula got you money to buy your truck. Mark thinks about what Kathy said for a moment and replies, yeah. Now I get it. Paula drives up and is surprised to find out that Eddie and Kathy are thinking of buying a house. And, of course, Paula wants to see it too. Kathy tells Mark and Paula, before we go, there's something that you guys need to know. Paula asks, uh-oh. What's that? Kathy explains, the real estate agent didn't think we can afford the house, so Eddie whispered to me, she obviously doesn't recognize you. And I whispered back, good. I'm really tired of signing autographs. But we whispered so that she can hear us. So, now she thinks I'm someone famous. Mark compliments Kathy, telling her, that's a good one. We'll play along. This should be fun. They all then head to the house. Eddie drives Kathy in his MGB. Mark finally gets to drive his construction vehicle in an official capacity, something he has been waiting for. They arrive back at the house. Walking around the outside, the pool catches Paula's eye. Wandering over to the pool area, Mark mentions, wow. The pool is big enough to swim laps. Eddie mentions, and it's heated. We can swim laps all year round. Kathy mentions, you can swim laps in January. I'm not swimming laps in this weather. After admiring the pool, they all go inside. Tracy, the agent, shows Kathy and Paula the living space, whereas Eddie and Mark go downstairs to examine the bones of the house. Mark quickly points out to Eddie, the floor joists are 12 inches on center, and they are 2x12s. I wonder why they did that. 2x10s, 16 inches on center, would be standard construction practice for this size house. Mark also points out that there are no cracks in the foundation wall, no plumbing leaks, and no evidence of termites. Mark finds no problems in the basement. Moving on, Eddie and Mark walk around the outside of the house, where Mark notices that there are no cracks in the brickwork. Mark points out, good. It has metal windows. Metal doesn't rot. Mark, pointing to a large pine tree too close to the house, mentions, "The only thing that I see out here is that pine tree needs to come down." Eddie replies, "Yeah, I can see that." Mark adds, "That should be easy enough to do." Inside, Mark notices that all the doors are still true, and there are no apparent water leaks. In summary, Mark tells Eddie, "Well, there's not anything obviously wrong." That is all good news to Eddie, for he would hate to see Kathy get upset if there was something seriously wrong with the house. After inspecting the house for more than an hour, Mark gives the structure his seal of approval. Eddie and Mark join Kathy and Paula, who are looking around inside. Eddie asks Kathy, "Can I show you something?" Kathy replies, "Sure." Eddie tells the agent, "We'll be right back. We're going to look at something outside." Eddie and Kathy walk outside, leaving Mark and Paula inside with the agent. Outside, Kathy asks Eddie, "What's up? Is there something wrong?" Eddie replies, "No. Mark says it checks out. I just wanted to hear what you thought." Putting her arms around Eddie's neck, Kathy asks him, "I really like this place. Can we get it? Please?" Eddie replies, "Sure. We have enough money, right?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. 4, 5, or 6 of them." Also liking the house, Eddie replies, "Then, let's get it." Meanwhile, back inside, the real estate agent asks Paula, "Okay, so please tell me. Am I supposed to know those two?" Mark, quickly catching on to what Kathy explained earlier, replies, "You would if you watch sports competitions. But I can't say too much more than that." Remembering how the crowd went wild when Kathy threw the discus, being quite vague, Paula adds, "Yeah, Kathy doesn't like all the publicity. Whenever she enters the field, the crowd goes wild. That's why they are wanting to move here. They can hide from the public." How Paula manages to say things like that with a straight face is anybody's guess. The agent, having her questions answered, albeit indirectly, replies, "Oh, I see. I won't pry then." Paula tells the agent, "I'm sure Kathy will really appreciate that." Kathy and Eddie walk back inside. Kathy tells the agent, "Okay, we'll take it. Now what?" The agent tells Kathy, "I'll have to draw up the contract, and we'll get the ball rolling." Kathy tells the agent, "Eddie won't be 18 until next weekend. Will that be a problem?" The agent assures her, "No. I'll just put in a special clause that states Eddie will officially sign the paperwork next week." The agent tells Kathy, "You do know that the owner will probably need a month or 6 weeks before they can move out, don't you?" Kathy replies, "No problem. You got it." The agent fills in the contract, and Kathy signs it. Kathy writes the earnest money check, and Kathy and Eddie are now on their way to having their house in the woods. Well, almost. The agent tells Kathy, "The owner will have to accept the contract, but I don't see any reason why they won't." Paula whispers to Mark, "Wow. That was easy." Mark replies, "Yeah, I'd say." Before they leave, Kathy and Eddie take another look around the inside of the house with Mark and Paula. Paula mentions to Kathy, "You can use the office to do your school work." Kathy replies, "Yeah, unless it's nice out. Then, I'll be doing my school work out by the pool." Before they get in their cars, they all decide to take one more look at the pool area. Walking around the pool area one more time, giving Eddie a high five, Kathy exclaims, "Awesome. We're not moving to Second Street." Paula gives Mark an interesting look, having no idea what Kathy's reference to Second Street is all about. Outside, Kathy points out an area by the pool and tells Eddie, "I want to buy a patio table and put it here. This can be where I do my school work when it's nice out." Seeing the beautiful view, Paula comments, "Yeah, I can see that. I'd really love to join you. This definitely beats the library. With the house about a mile from the university, Kathy can see how convenient it will be. Eddie and Kathy thank Mark for inspecting the house. They all head out, with Kathy having a little something more to explain to her parents.